Thank you, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, June 13th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
100 members of the MDC formation led by Professor Welshman Ncube dumped the party, citing lack of good leadership.
The group that I work with decided this weekend to leave the MDC. Our political careers are being messed up.
Some Zimbabweans make a living through removing landmines planted by the Rhodesian security forces.
We recruit locally, we train up the guys, and we put them to work on their own fields. We get the best information about the minefields too, because it's the communities who live there and know what's going on there.
And as Zimbabweans join the rest of the world in mourning the killing of people in an American nightclub.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Nearly 100 members of the opposition MDC led by Professor Welshman Ncube, including top officials, this weekend announced that they were quitting the party, a move that will further weaken it after facing similar mass resignations a couple of months ago. The members who resigned this week include former National Healing Minister Moses Mzilandlovu, trade unionist Esof Mdlongwa, and former members of Parliament Abednego Moyo, Duduzile Dube, and Killian Masuku. The group last year wrote a petition asking its president Welshman Ncube to address a number of issues, including his alleged lack of transparency, hand-picking candidates, and other issues. Ncube could not be reached as he was not answering his phone. Mzilandlovu, who was relieved of his duties as Secretary General of the party after the petition last year, said they were leaving the party following Ncube's failure to address the issues raised in the petition.
The group that I work with decided this weekend to leave the MDC as a party for the reasons that were stated in the petition, and having far stretched out our patience and hope that the reasons we had cited as being the foundation for our displeasure and dissatisfaction with the style of leadership that he had given to the MDC, we found it appropriate now to say our patience can no hold any longer, and we think our political careers are being messed up, and so we found it appropriate to part ways with Professor Ncube.
Is it true that you are setting up a regional party?
We have numerous options ahead of us. I mean, options that we think we can take, but we're still weighing these options. But let me respond to the suggestion that we want to form a regional party. Firstly, we never appointed anyone to be our spokesperson over this matter. And we are surprised by the enthusiasm of these individuals who speak on our behalf when they are not part of our group. Secondly, on the concept of a regional party itself, let me remind Zimbabweans that Zimbabwe was ruled by a regional party in 1980 after ZANU-PF failed to garner support in Matabeleland.
And that was Moses Mzilandlovu, a former member of the MDC led by Welshman Ncube. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Plumtree. Meanwhile, MDCT says it has asked Harare acting mayor Chris Mbanga to step down after failing to follow party directives on the reinstatement of suspended Harare town clerk James Mushore. Mushore has been a thorn in the flesh for the MDCT, as local government minister Sevia Kasukwere recently suspended Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni for allegedly recruiting Mushore without following proper channels. Mbanga is reportedly unwilling to work with Mushore.
For many years, minefields planted by the colonial Rhodesian forces during the War of Liberation of the 1970s to stop Golira incursions into the country have been an economic barrier for villagers living in the booby-trapped vicinities of villages in Mukumbura, communal lands, Mashonaland Central Province. Despite this setback, some locals are now earning a living through removing the landmines for the benefit of their families and thousands of villagers. Reporter Patricia Mudadigwa speaks to some of the villagers involved in the demining exercise along the Zimbabwe-Mozambique border.
Watching some of the villagers removing landmines planted by the Ian Douglas Smith regime is petrifying, as the booby traps can be triggered by any slight movement of a human being, a cow, a goat, or any related animals. Noah Pirora and Takawira Zenda know the dangers of demining and have mastered it. They move delicately to a demining zone, start identifying landmines using modernized equipment, and remove the mines. They look very relaxed when they work on the landmines, thanks to the knowledge they derived from Halo Trust, one of the world's largest humanitarian mine clearance organizations. The non-governmental organization claims in its website that it saves lives and restores communities threatened by landmines and other weapons of war, such as cluster bombs, stockpiles of small arms, and improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. Halo is doing exactly that in Mukumbura, where Piroro and Zenda have been highly trained in removing landmines. Piroro says, despite the danger associated with the demining, he is now making a living of clearing landmines.
Some of the deminers who get a chance to be employed here are now constructing their houses and living well.
Zenda adds that demining is creating some jobs for local people.
In this area, we've been facing problems in terms of production of crops and other self-help projects that we can do. So the demining exercise that has been done will go a long way in helping us to have projects so that we look after our families. Poverty is the major problem here.
For professional reasons, the two declined to refill their monthly earnings. Halo Trust Program Manager Tom Deep says, apart from empowering communities, local people also have good knowledge of the minefields. He says, clearing their own land also motivates Mukumbura villagers to do a thorough job in minefields.
We recruit locally, we train up the guys, and we put them to work on their own fields. We get the best information about the minefields too, because it's the communities who live there and know what's going on there. They're motivated, it's their families that are going to use the land. It makes sense. They're not going to leave something behind if they think their own families are going to use it.
While some people still view demining activities as a preserve for men, in Mukumbura communal lands, even women have joined in clearing minefields. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mukumbura, I'm Patricia Mudadigwa.
Zimbabweans have joined the rest of the world in mourning the death of 49 people in an American nightclub early Saturday morning, shot by a lone gunman. President Barack Obama said money, the tragedy in a gay club in Florida, appears to be a case of homegrown extremism. Obama said the killer, Omar Sadiq Martin, was apparently inspired by extremist information on the internet.
At this stage, we see no clear evidence that he was directed externally. It does appear that at the last minute, he announced allegiance to ISIL. But there is no evidence so far that he was in fact directed by ISIL. And there also at this stage is no direct evidence that he was part of a larger plot. The point is that if we have self-radicalized individuals in this country, then they are going to be very difficult, oftentimes, to find ahead of time. And how easy it is for them to obtain weapons is, in some cases, going to make a difference as to whether they're able to carry out attacks like this or not.
Authorities say that during his attack on the club, Martini called Orlando's 911 emergency line and pledged allegiance to Islamic State and its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and also referenced the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing that killed three people. We spoke to Promise Sunday, a Zimbabwean living in Florida, about the killings.
Right now, I think the biggest activity that's going on is law enforcement is trying to notify the families of the deceased and also releasing the names. Soon after they notify the families, they are releasing those names. So far, about 29 names have been released of the 48 murdered, and then the 49 that were murdered by this gunman.
What kind of activity are you seeing around that area?
Mostly still considered a crime area. So the immediate club where the shootings happened is actually being treated as a crime scene. They are still looking at ballistics and all those other things. So it is actually cordoned off, and no one is actually allowed to be very close to the scene. But in the immediate environment, it actually happened very close to the Orlando Regional Medical Center. And I think we have seen some blood donation red buses stationed there, and the community is coming en masse to contribute blood and set some flowers, vigils, somewhere close to where it happened.
Is there any indication that there could be some Zimbabweans?
So far, no. There is no indication of any Zimbabweans. I have personally called around, most of Zimbabweans that live in the area that I know, and we are a tightly knit community, and there is no reports of any one of our community members having been involved. The club is a mostly predominantly a Spanish gay club.
That was Promise Sunday, a Zimbabwean living in Orlando, Florida, in the U.S., speaking with Studio 7.
Pathfinder Luxury Coaches recently achieved a milestone by entering into a joint venture with South African bus company Intercape. And now, the company's co-founder, Cleopatra Magoni, is taking up another potentially fortune-changing opportunity, the Mandela Washington Fellowship. Magoni is one of the nearly 60 Zimbabwean youths who are traveling to the United States this week for the six-week fellowship to do leadership and business studies. She talks to Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo.
I feel it's a lifetime opportunity, not just to change myself and per se Cleopatra as an individual, but also the potential that it's got to change so many other people and organizations that I represent. Talking even for a lot of women in Zimbabwe, a lot of women in Africa, talking even as an ambassador for the transport sector, which is my passion, and even for the tourism sector, it's got a whole lot of potential of changing through the things that I'll probably just go there and learn and come back and try and implement. So I'm very excited and I'm looking forward to this opportunity, and I hope I don't just change myself, but I change also, you know, the whole lot of people who are around me and the people who are just in touch with me.
Tell us more about your company.
Okay, my company, I co-founded Pathfinder Luxury Coaches. It's become a well-known brand in Zimbabwe. It's a luxury transport company which does intercity routes. And our dream is to get to go to all the tourist destinations within Zimbabwe. But for now, we ply the Harare Blue Big Falls daily. That's my business. And recently, we've done a joint venture with Intercape. Intercape is a South African company to form Intercape Pathfinder. And I'm currently working as its business development director. So I'm responsible for sourcing of new opportunities across Africa and just exploring and making sure we do the marketing and the strategic planning well.
And how do you hope to benefit from this fellowship?
From the fellowship, I hope to benefit quite a number of things. I'm looking forward to the leadership sessions because, you know what, I believe even as a leader, it's a very dynamic kind of skill, and you have to keep learning to become a better leader. And I also hope to benefit mostly from the cross-cultural connections and the networks and the relationships, because I really believe as a business person, even in Zimbabwe or in Africa, or even as a global business person, you actually do more from making relationships with people in different sectors and different areas and different, because you leverage off those relationships to actually make your business get better and to make yourself even better as a person. So I'm looking forward to quite a number of things, but mostly for me is the networking.
That was Mandela Washington Fellow and Pathfinder Luxury Coaches co-founder Cleopatra Magoni on the line from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo.
Young people out there, are you concerned about the many issues that affect you and Zimbabweans in general? Rise to the occasion. Make an impact. Let your voice be heard, and let's get talking on The Connection.
We cover a range of issues that affect young people.
I am Tatenda Gumbo.
And I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
And we are the hosts for your number one youth forum, The Connection. Join us tomorrow as we discuss the Day of the African Child being observed under the theme Conflict and Crisis in Africa, Protecting All Children's Rights.
To get involved, send us a message with the hashtag TheConnection on WhatsApp. The number is 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
people living with albinism facing various problems in Zimbabwe.
And the football fraternity mourns the death of 7 Dynamo supporters.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A Qatari court today handed down a one-year suspended sentence for adultery to a Dutch woman that was dragged and raped in an upscale Doha nightclub.
And residents on the border of Eritrea and Ethiopia reported hearing sounds of heavy fighting today as each country accused the other of launching an attack.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, and we are broadcasting on 909 Medium Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Single mother Sipelile Machinga Midze says living with albinism has not been very easy, as many Zimbabweans are not aware that this is a hereditary disease that cannot be physically transmitted to any person. Machinga Midze says the government should create an environment that would ensure that they have access to medication, lotions and eyeglasses, which are critical in their day-to-day lives. This call comes at a time when the world is today marking the United Nations International Albinism Awareness Day. This year's theme is, quote, celebrate diversity, promote inclusion, protect our rights, end quote. Machinga Midze tells us more on how she is managing to live with albinism.
Yeah, living with albinism, I can say it's not as easy as my other colleagues feel. Because even growing up, now I'm a lady, as a mother, you know, you face so many challenges. Being a mother, the marriage life, at first they may not accept you. Moreover, raising the kids, it needs to be someone who is self-employed, financially stable. So, you know, with the condition now, jobs are not easily found. So it's even hard for us to get employment with our condition. So living with albinism as a mother is not easy. Nothing I can say is easy. Moreover, I think there is need for people to be made aware, to be more conscientized about albinism.
What health challenges would you say you have faced living with albinism?
The health part is the most dangerous part, I can say, because now I'm 39 years. So I can say I have major ops which I'm also for. So really, it needs someone who supports you financially, because all the operations that we undergo, they need money. Moreover, health-wise, it's not easy to live without those sunscreen lotions. And they are very expensive to get from the pharmacies. So it's not easy, even for someone who is living in the rural, remote areas, there is excessive exposure to the sun. As a result, the skin will be damaged. So there is need for us to have regular checkups, of which it's not easy to have those regular checkups, because in the local clinics, they don't have anything to give us. Give a paint, what they say is to treat wounds, doesn't cater for us. So in the general hospitals, for one to be able to get on the list, there is need to wait for more than 6 months, because there is a long backlog to wait on the queue, so that we end up people having some wounds which are really pathetic. One may think in Shona, of which that would be bad. So health-wise, it's not easy. But we thank God there is one doctor who had assisted me so far. For me not to have those major ops again, maybe because I was supposed to have another one on the cheek recently, but I had the treatment of having to be sprayed on the wound, killing the cancerous cells, of which is a very expensive treatment, so it's not easy. The treatment was for free. He is offering free treatment to all albinos in Zimbabwe. It's Dr. Mutangadura.
There's also the issue of having problems with the eyes. What have you noticed in your day-to-day living with albinism?
It's not really easy. Even in the scorching sun to open the eyes, it will be hard for you to see clearly because it seems as if the sun is inside the eye. So I think if they could afford us also those spectacles, like to the local hospital, like Ambuyanihanda, if they could especially consider albinos, especially the school-going age, so I think if the government would also assist access spectacles for school-going children, I think if they could say for the children under 12, what is the time they will reach A-level, they could have access to spectacles. So I think if they could make it a policy also to afford us with spectacles, that would be good for us.
That was Sipelile Machinga Midze, a woman living with albinism, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. A dermatologist, Donald Mutangadura, explains the challenges of living with albinism.
The major thing that should be done is sun avoidance. And these people should have minimum exposure to sunlight. And whenever they're exposed to the sun, they should put on protective clothing and apply sunscreen lotions.
And are the sunscreen lotions readily available in Zimbabwe?
They're a bit pricey, the sunscreen lotion. Most people cannot really afford them, especially the majority of our people living with albinism.
And just tell us about the nature of work that you do. You are a dermatologist. How do you work with people with albinism?
Well, basically, I do treat people with skin conditions as a dermatologist. But I've realized that the plight of people living with albinism, the majority of them are poor and cannot afford specialist services like from dermatologists. So I volunteered and opted to treat them for free.
But is this an easy thing, looking at Zimbabwe's economy? And have you also managed to bring other dermatologists on board? Or do you have some, say, in the international community who are willing to work with you?
I've tried to talk to fellow dermatologists, but it appears that most of the people are not really willing to offer services for free. But however, I've approached some colleagues like Sejon, who have offered to do like major skin operations for free on people living with albinism.
That was Donald Mutangadura, a dermatologist who has been offering free treatment to people living with albinism, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Killings of people with albinism for enrichment continues to be an issue of human rights concern on the continent, as sparked by the killing earlier this year of a Malawian woman named Eunice Phiri. Amnesty International's regional specialist for Southern Africa, Simeon Mawanza, says attacks against people with albinism for ritual purposes is not common in Zimbabwe, but discrimination of various forms is rife.
In 2015, there was actually a spike in the killing of people with albinism, abduction, desecration of people's graves, fueled by the belief that body parts of people with albinism, when used in witchcraft, do bring good luck to business people or politicians and the likes. These beliefs are not scientific. These beliefs are probably fueled by criminal traditional healers who are probably selling a dummy to the people who buy these parts. But it is definitely the main drive behind the attacks on people with albinism, certainly in countries like Malawi, Tanzania, and Mozambique, and even South Africa, where Amnesty has documented such attacks.
Do you feel this is an issue that Zimbabwe should be concerned about?
Well, not at the extent of the violence that we are seeing in the other countries, but the discrimination against minorities, including people with albinism, other minorities, sexual minorities, you know, does happen in Zimbabwe. Some discrimination might not be violent, but it could be structural. You could see that there could be limitations implications in terms of access to education for people with albinism, because albinism affects not only the skin. Often people with albinism have poor eyesight, so they might need glasses at an early age. They also need access to issues such as sunscreen. Over 80% of people with albinism worldwide die before the age of 40. And one of the major contributing factors to that is the harmful rays of the sun, particularly their overexposure to skin cancers.
What are the laws that can ensure this?
I think the first thing before we go to the law is to create opportunities for people with albinism to be able to speak and highlight their lived experiences in their communities, in terms of access to services, and in the country as a whole, to recognize that they should be protected from discrimination. Also to ensure that there are laws that criminalizes hate speech. You know, such kind of dehumanizing languages and attitudes should be tackled at the highest level, even through the law.
And that was Amnesty International Southern African specialist Simeon Mawanza speaking with Studio 7's Ndimiyake Mwakalielie.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage, where the voices of Zimbabwe's youth are heard. Today, my guest is Natasha Bell, and she's got a lot to share with you, a youth staying in Washington, D.C. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you guys for having me.
What makes you incredible?
I believe that what makes me incredible is that I do not wait for things to happen for me. I'm always looking for something to do for myself and trying out new things, whether it's looking to work for two different jobs or just trying out to see if there's anything else that I can do on the side to either make money or just to gain more experience for myself.
You are 21, right?
Yes, I just turned 21 in March.
Now, how do you compare your life being in Zimbabwe and now being in the United States of America?
It's a little bit hard to compare because I left when I was 13. That's when I came here. And when I was 13, back home, I did have responsibilities. You know, as a young female back home, you have to cook, you have to, you know, help out a lot with the house, doing duties. Really have responsibilities of working an actual job, you know, from morning to maybe 6 o'clock or even more than 8 hours or 10 hours, and actually taking care of my own phone bill and actually going to buy my own clothes. I didn't have those responsibilities. So coming to this country, you do realize that people that travel abroad, they're not just going because they want to live a luxury life or they just want to get money. They're actually going because they do have the knowledge that it's not easy to come here, but they're dedicated enough to come here and work 2-3 jobs or even 4 sometimes to be able to help people that are back home and to also build a better life for themselves here. Difference is that just working even harder than I imagined that I would have to.
So how did you get into African jewelry?
I'm very interested in drawing and painting and just arts and crafts. Just if I see someone wearing an outfit, I always picture myself wearing it differently or adding a couple other pieces to it. Because I always love being African. I know people back home think that when you come to the U.S., you forget, you know, where you came from and you just want to be American, but I'm totally different from that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for having me.
And that was Natasha Bell. And I am Chione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage.
Stay tuned for Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our hosts, Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube, will be talking to listeners about albinism. If you wish to join the show, call us at 001202026192077.
Or you can send us a message on our WhatsApp, and the number is 001-202-465-0318.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
100 members of the MDC formation led by Professor Welshman Ncube dumped the party, citing lack of good leadership.
Some Zimbabweans make a living through removing landmines planted by the Rhodesians.